Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into Sports Talk. We are still celebrating LSU baseball's national champion. Jay Johnson bringing in his second title for the Tigers. We're going to see plenty of those players heading to the Major League Baseball in the draft coming up very soon to help us break that down. Aaron Fitt, the co-editor and national writer for D1 Baseball. Thank you so much, Aaron. How you been doing?
Pretty good, fellas. How you guys?
Doing awesome. First week, before we get into some of the draft stuff, D1 Baseball just recently named Jay Johnson the National Coach of the Year after bringing home a second national title in 3 years for the Bayou Bengals. Just an overall awesome season for this Tiger squad, seeing how they developed and matured along the way, and a really remarkable run in the College World Series finals as well. Just your overall impressions of Jay Johnson. We love him here, and I mean, winning helps, but he just seems an overall really good guy, great personality, and someone that's just easy to get along with.
Yeah, he is, and he's in a lot of ways the same guy that he was 20 years ago when he was a young assistant at San Diego, learning the ropes from Rich Hill. And I've known Jay a long time now, and through every stop of his journey, he's gotten more and more impressive. But he's still the same, approachable, just friendly guy that he's always been. Now, that doesn't mean he doesn't have a killer instinct. I mean, he wants to win, and that's why he's been so successful. The job that he's done at LSU is just, it's so impressive. And we've never, in the 10 years of our website, we've never awarded the same coach this award twice until now. He's the first multi-time winner. And I think the reason for that is because, it's kind of a recognition of what he's established there, which is he's guided this LSU program into kind of a new golden age. And just his expertise, his masterful touch when it comes to roster construction. It's not just portal. It's not just buying stars in the portal. It's like they've hit on some stars in the portal. They've also hit on some nice supporting pieces in the portal. And they've continued to build really well the high school ranks. I mean, the homegrown core for this team, Jared Jones and Milam and, Anderson, all these guys, they were a huge part of this deal. It's not just, rent to players. And I think that's the criticism that gets leveled against LSU from the haters, right, is they've just got all this money. They're just buying championships. That's not what it is. I mean, the portal is out there for everybody. A lot of people are spending money in the portal. A lot of people are really, really going all in on the portal, even more than LSU is. And so I just think that the way they've done it with, blending the various different ways to attract talent and then developing that talent. And then you see the way their teams get better at the end of the year. It's happened every year, really, since he's been there. And this was another great example of it.
Aaron, you mentioned Anderson, Kate Anderson, the ace southpaw for this LSU baseball team that helped lead them to their eighth national championship. I want to get your thoughts on Cade because I was looking at Kylie McDaniel's ranking for the 2025 MLB draft, and he has Cade sitting at number one. I know that Cade had a fantastic campaign. Talking about the homegrown talent from St. Paul's right in our backyard here on the North Shore. I just want to get your thoughts on Cade and his projection at the MLB level. If you ask Jay, and we spoke with Jay a couple weeks ago, and he made his pitch, basically, that the Washington Nationals should take him number one overall and give LSU their second number one overall pick in the past three seasons. But your thoughts on Cade Anderson and where he could potentially go in the draft?
Yeah, we just moved him to number one on our board as well, our updated list that came out today. For a while, he'd been right up there and just, not – I guess the criticism is there as much ceiling? I mean, there are people out there who don't know if he's a true number one starter. They think he's a very safe floor, number three, maybe number two. For me, I think he can be a number one starter in the major leagues because I still think there's more to come. I mean, the way his arm action works, it's so easy. He's gotten so much stronger year over year. And I think with his frame, there's room to add more strength. And then I think he'll throw harder even than he does right now. And he throws plenty hard, up to 95 or so, whatever. And he holds that 92, 95 deep into games. And the advanced feel for three pitches, three secondary pitches that are all elite is really, really special. You know, I mean, you got a guy that can spin two different distinct breaking balls on the curveball and the slider, and command them, and the changeup as well. And he can miss bats with all of them. Or he can land them all for strikes. I mean, it's a really special combination for a left-hander, with power stuff and feel and projection and everything. He checks all the boxes. Great makeup, a performance track record. I just think the sum of the parts adds up to even more than you know, the numbers will tell you. And so, yeah, you can roll the dice at a Liam Doyle, you know, who can throw 100 for the left side. That's cool. But that's kind of a reliever look, you know, is what a lot of scouts think. And, you know, the other guys, you can kind of knock them. I mean, there's guys who throw harder than Anderson, but throwing harder doesn't necessarily mean you have a higher ceiling. I think that's old thinking that we need to get past.
Curious, Aaron, where do you feel like a guy like Ethan Holiday ends up going? A lot of folks project he could be that top overall selection.
Certainly one of the top candidates for it. And, you know, I'm not particularly dialed in on the high school side. I'm so college focused, but yeah, I mean, you know, he's on the very, very short list. If it's not Kate Anderson, I think it'll probably be one of those top high school guys. I don't expect there would be another college player that would go before Anderson. I think he'll be the top college player off the board.
You know, going with Anthony Ianson next, looking at D1 Baseball's projection of him as the number 20 prospect from the college ranks, like, he was so, so good, especially in the second half of the season, really kind of made that 1-2 punch with Kate Anderson that helped LSU once again get back to Omaha and capture their eighth national title. And Anthony Ianson at the next level, I know that people have said maybe the fastball needs a little bit of work, but the breaking stuff was just fantastic, and you saw it on full display with LSU.
Yeah, and that's been his calling card, I mean, since he was at UC San Diego. And you know, I remember last summer when he was with Team USA, I was talking with Eric Campbell, who's the longtime director for the collegiate national team, and he said it was the best breaking ball they had on the whole staff, you know, and they had all the best arms in the country on that staff. And he's right. I mean, that pitch is just an absolute wipeout. And it's not his only weapon, you know. I mean, again, it's a guy that can beat you and miss bats with multiple pitches. Yes, the fastball characteristics, you know, as the analytics guys will tell you, it plays a little below its velocity. I think there is some pitch shaping that can still be done there. And that's what these pro clubs are really good at, frankly, is taking a guy that has arm strength and has a really good arm action and has feel to spin the ball, you know, spin the breaking ball. If you check those boxes, they can manipulate your grip or whatever it is they can do to kind of get more out of the fastball. And I think whoever drafts Ianson is going to have success with that because he does have feel to pitch. And he has great makeup. He has aptitude. He's an awesome kid. I really, really like him. And a guy that I'll be rooting for in pro ball.
Aaron, do you think that Ianson's going to be a first-round pick? I know the MLB draft is a little bit different where you have the competitive balance picks and the compensation picks. And yeah, it's 43 first-round picks. And a couple different boards have them around 40. But it feels like there's multiple teams within maybe, let's say, the 25 to 40 range, especially once you get to those competitive balance picks. And you see teams like Seattle and Tampa Bay and Los Angeles and New York, all these teams that are known for developing pitching. I think that any one of these teams from that range, basically around 25 to 40, could easily take them back into the first round.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. Absolutely. I think that's where he fits. I mean, maybe, you know, somebody jumps up and takes him even a little bit earlier than that. Because, again, there is track record here, real track record, as well as stuff and makeup. Checks a lot of boxes. And we have seen guys, you know, make jumps based on kind of their Omaha, I guess, stardom, the extreme stardom. I mean, almost legendary status, right? Like the Will Bednarz, the Mississippi State comes to mind as a guy, or Cade Horton from Oklahoma. I mean, these are guys that made themselves a lot of money in the College World Series. You know, I mean, in years past, that wouldn't have been available to them because the draft was before the College World Series. But now we've seen guys make that jump, that very late jump. And maybe he's, you know, in that category just because, yes, he was already really good. He had a long track record of success, but to continue doing it at that level, you know, on that big stage, I think probably shows scouts even a little bit more that this guy's pretty special.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Aaron, curious your thoughts on if some guys that the Tigers could lose in the draft, but we're quite not sure yet. Someone like an Ethan Frye and Chase Shores. I'm just curious your opinion on what you think is going to happen with that those two.
So those are good ones because I could kind of see it going either way.
Okay.
I think Fry, you know, both of them have such big tools, right? The raw tools are loud. And Fry at this point is, you know, enough older that I think he's ready to go out and play. I would be surprised if he comes back. I mean, you know, I just think it's time now, and he's performed enough, and we know he's got huge juice. And, you know, I think probably that's a, I don't know, third, maybe fourth round pick, maybe second, even if the club really falls in love with the tools. I think he goes out and signs. Shores now, I mean, you can kind of dream on that guy coming back to school and maybe becoming a, you know, top five pick next year. I mean, if it clicks right now, there's enough risk there that maybe he slides some. But I mean, how many guys, you know, with that kind of body throw turbo sinkers at 101, you know, I mean, it's pretty rare. And so, again, wouldn't shock me if somebody quote unquote overdrafts him based on the performance track record. I mean, the numbers might not tell you that this guy is a first round pick, but, everything else would tell you, okay, we can work on the command and just kind of take a flyer. It wouldn't shock me, but if not, you know, that's a guy that could bet on himself. He's got two more years of eligibility left. I mean, as an eligible sophomore, I know he's also maybe, you know, the third year player, you know, so he's usually those guys that the clock starts to tick and they kind of want to get into pro ball. So they've had some success, but, if he doesn't get the number that he wants, I could see it. I could see that guy taking a bet on himself coming back. I don't want Tiger fans to get their hopes up because I think that's probably not that likely. I think probably they both wind up signing, but you know, there's a chance.
You know, another one that I'm interested in, Danny Dickinson, the second baseman from LSU. When Jay Johnson went out and made the move, it was so funny to see the response. Oh, Utah Valley. The heck is Jay doing here?
Yeah, our text line and callers were like, what is he doing?
And then LSU fans just get to watch him play, and he's unbelievable in the injury that he played through in the postseason as well. And Aaron, this was one of the most underappreciated parts about this LSU baseball team. As you know, their defense was unbelievable, especially on the infield. Steven Milam, Danny Dickinson, Michael Braswell, they had three shortstops on the infield, basically. And then you have Jared Jones, who was excellent on the infield as well, and we'll get to him in just a second. But Danny Dickinson, number 37 on D1 Baseball's college prospect rankings. MLB.com has him ranked 80. Day one of the draft is 105 picks. It's those first three rounds. I think he'll definitely hear his name called on night one.
Yeah, I think so. I think that is pretty likely. You know, it's a guy that has performed now for multiple years, put up big, big numbers at Utah Valley, and then, you know, went and played with Team USA, and then he put up good numbers with LSU, and despite, you know, playing down the stretch with that broken handmaid, I mean, it's crazy. You know, the toughness that he showed and just the way he performed. You're right about the defense piece being such an underrated ingredient for this LSU run. I mean, it was a truly elite run prevention outfit. And it's not just because they had great arms. It's because they played great defense behind them, as we saw in Omaha. And he was a big part of that. So, another one that I, you know, coming in, I'll tell you guys, the first time I saw him in Frisco, saw him with LSU this spring, it was in Frisco. And you know, just, I don't know, something about him. He's kind of flashy, you know, and it felt like maybe there's a lot of bling going on here. Just maybe not my kind of guy, frankly. So it was my first impression. And then you hear him talk and he's just got so much heart and he's thoughtful and he's got charisma and he just, man, I'm in. I mean, that first day I was like, oh, wow, like this guy's not who I thought he was, you know, judge the book by the cover. And I just think that's impressive. And, you know, the organizations that talk to him, I'm sure they'll get the same impression. And he's going to go out and have a good pro career because he can do a lot of things to help the team win.
Aaron, Charlie mentioned it there. What were some of the projections right now with D1 baseball for first baseman Jared Jones? Where is he likely to end up getting drafted?
Yeah, that's another, again, interesting one because there's some risk-reward here, yeah. Right? I mean, the reward being it's elite, top-of-the-scales raw power that he has utilized pretty well. I mean, over the last couple of years now, he's hit plenty of home runs and been a good performer, but there's that strikeout piece. That is, you know, a red flag. I mean, frankly, there's just the track record of college hitters that strike out at the rate, you know, that he strikes out at. Getting to the big leagues and figuring it out, being really good big league hitters is not great. And so, you know, again, that's something that for a lot of teams is just kind of a hard and fast rule and model. Like they're not going to take a guy with that kind of strikeout rate. Period. You know, after multiple years of college, but. He'll get his shot because that power is special. And obviously, again, he's a winner. I mean, really a winning baseball player, even despite the strikeouts. He's shown some adjustability, and you know, maybe you figure something out with the right hitting coach, and you can kind of improve that selectivity a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I think probably a top five round pick somewhere, something like that. I mean, maybe 5 to 7. I mean, something like that is probably where he fits.
You know, Aaron, it was a little bit surprising last year, I think, when Jared Jones, once you get to like the fourth round, the fifth round, and then the number starts to go down a little bit, I think we were all a little bit shocked that Jared Jones wasn't selected and that he made it back to LSU as, you know, draft eligible sophomore entering the junior year. But I think at this point, he's obviously going to get drafted. But if you had to look ahead to, let's say, next week, right, by the time we're sitting here next Tuesday, which player do you think we're expecting to get selected that doesn't get picked, whether it had to do with signability or the player wanted to come back, that you think would be a surprise for this LSU baseball program? I know you brought up Chase Shores, but, you know, is it Chase or is there anyone else that you're kind of looking at as well?
I think Shores for me is probably the one that, just because, again, that's a guy that I could see making that big leap, you know, I mean, because it's coming. You see it coming with this guy. I mean, he the fact that they stuck with him and he stuck with himself and became, you know, a national championship caliber closer that you could trust, you know, for a team that won it all at the end of the year, given where he was early in the season with the strike throwing and just kind of the Chase Shores thrill ride, you know, it's remarkable. I mean, how much better he's getting. And so I think you can easily envision that trajectory continuing, you know, if he comes back another year in college. Now, you know, again, like, he probably will get paid enough to go ahead and sign. But I mean, if we've seen guys before say, hey, you know what, like, I think I can come back and be a top five, number one overall pick next year. I mean, Mark Appel for Stanford did something like that. And I think he was a first round pick as a junior, late first rounder, I believe. It's been a while now, but came back and was number one overall the next year for Stanford. And, you know, he didn't wind up having a very good pro career, but that gamble kind of worked out for him. So that's still the one that I kind of think of that, you know, maybe he bets on himself. It could happen.
Aaron, thanks so much for the time, man. Definitely appreciate all your knowledge.
You got it, fellas. Good talking to you.
Thanks, Aaron.
Aaron Fick, co-editor and national writer for D1 Baseball. You can follow him on X at Aaron Fitt. We'll be talking more about the upcoming MLB draft all week as we get ready. Was it Sunday, Monday?
Yeah, so Sunday is the first three rounds.
Right.
The top 105 picks. And I feel like we ran through a good amount of players that could go in that top 105 from LSU. With Cade, with Ianson, with Chase Shores, maybe, as Aaron kind of said, it's a little bit up in the air. He might decide to gamble on himself and come back. We'll see what happens there. That's kind of the one to watch. Danny Dickinson should go in the top 105. Maybe Ethan Frye sneaks in there as well as far as those top three rounds. We'll just kind of have to see. And then from rounds 4 through 20 will all be on Monday. So once again, by Tuesday of next week, we'll know who got selected, where they got selected, what pick they got selected with, and who could potentially be making it to LSU's campus.
We'll see if the Pirates get any help coming their way on offense for poor Skeens as well.
Steve, I sent you that text that he has more war than he does wins as a pitcher. Have you ever seen that?
No, that's absurd.
I've never seen that before in my life.
Paul, we wish you the best. Hopefully you get out of Pittsburgh soon.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right. On audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.